everyone. Welcome to another rip-roaring episode of Art and Labor. There's so much to cover. Wow. We are the podcast covering the ongoing struggle to survive as an art and or cultural worker or an artist, art worker adjacent, whatever.
You can all your ding
get
ding
in the umbrella. Come on,
crayon toting queeros out there. This all the podcast freaks is for you.
All the freaks and the losers. Is your rock and roll?
Where my goths at?
All the goths. All the freakos. Hey, I went to the beach all weekend and
what's your name?
All right. My name is OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love. And you went to the beach.
I went to the beach with all my freako friends and I had a great time. But that's why we're late.
I went to the beach too.
Oh my God.
But I did it with someone that I love.
Oh my God, did you really? Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was just the two of us.
Did you go Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday.
Which beach did you go to?
Oh, it took us forever to get out there. And then I was like, let's just get on the Q train and go to Brighton Beach.
That's nice.
And then we had a hot dog.
That's great.
Yeah, it ruled. I was like, oh my God, we're eating hot dogs.
It takes so long. My group, we all like imploded on public transit. Like it was just like, we just dissolved. We like have all these different mental issues. We're all juggling at the same time and like trying to coordinate the beach. And then the beach has no service. And then there's different parts of the beach.
Yes.
And we basically like had like a desert caravan from one side of the beach to the other because we're like, we gotta go to Gay Beach, but we also want to grill.
Oh,
so we went to the grill side and we grilled, but then we were in an illegal, like, we weren't supposed to grill. So the park guy was like, do you have a permit? And we're like, no. And we're like, oh, we're sorry, we didn't know we needed a permit. And he was like, oh, it's fine.
Oh, and
then
thank
we were
you.
Like, then we were like worried he was gonna come back, so we like packed up real quick.
Nice.
And then like a bunch of us were like, we need to go to the gay side because all the
you hid all the falafels like in your cheeks and then just like
no,
squirreling all this hummus away.
No, we packed up all these like veggie burgers and like veggie dogs and like we frantically like left like this weird like dilapidated side of the beach that nobody ever uses.
Nice.
And then we were like, we were in straight people zone for a bit, but we started naming it like Sonic Zones. We were like, okay, this is straight zone act one. We're going to go to gay zone act two and then gay zone act three. And then we have a bonus stage, which is walking from straight zone to gay zone and stopping at the bathrooms in between and rehydrating.
And that's where the Eggman is. And you got to make sure that Eggman does not go in your stall.
You got to get the Chaos Emeralds. You got to get all the little blue balls. And the blue balls in this case were ice cream cones and water at the sink because it was the hottest day of the year.
Yeah.
And it was the hottest time of the day when we decided to go from one end of the beach to the other. It was psycho.
Amazing.
It was totally.
Yeah,
range.
It's really hard to get out to the beach. It's actually like, it's like a major gauntlet. You got to get through and then you get there and you get in the water and it all washes away.
Yeah, that's the best part.
It's going to like focus on the water and that's how you get there.
It was all worth it. It was just like truly insane. Like it was just like a pack of total weirdos trying to organize so much at once was truly a lot, but it was all worth it.
Beautiful.
It was insane. Yeah. We stayed till sundown and it was great.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we watched the sunset too.
Oh my God.
We watched the sunset and we had ice cream.
Wow.
And we floated around in the water.
That's so nice.
And when the sunset was on the water. It's whatever, yeah. You know. There's like kids and people and stuff. But I kind of love that. I love that there's so much going on and you can just kind of like wallow around like a seal amongst seals. And
it's also like not as much as one ordeal because it has a big, robust boardwalk.
Oh, yeah. I love the boardwalk.
Yeah.
But it's the same part of me. I don't know. I'll have the like masochistic aspect of enjoying malls for what they are. Like I'll get down in a mall. I'll be like, wow, this is horrible. Cool. Like, oh,
oh yeah.
Damn. Yeah. Like I want to get some food that's just like blue flavored.
I love the degrading of public space and culture. No, I mean,
yeah,
like,
totally.
Yeah, just like,
I like
all
the
insane
mutations.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and then, so it's like, it's the mass and the lights and the people and all the grease and the hypodermic needles that have just been
everything
bleached by the sun. It's safe.
I mean, it's sort like, of. I think Joey got
tampon
sepsis.
Applicator.
Didn't you get sepsis on your toe?
If I had sepsis, I would probably be dead.
What? We
didn't
went
you
to
get
Coney...
toxic shock syndrome?
Yeah.
Didn't you have? Didn't no. you have to amputate something?
I'm
before?
Serious. You had a serious injury on your toe because we
cellulitis.
Went to the cellulitis. Okay.
Oh, I had cellulitis.
I don't know what that. I don't know what that is, but it sounds serious.
Oh man, I had cellulitis all up and down my left arm.
That's awful.
Oh man, you couldn't touch my skin.
That's awful.
Yeah, I had blue.
You couldn't walk, right? Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, cellulitis hurts.
It was scary.
Yeah.
That's why I thought it was something really serious, but I wasn't sure what it was.
Nah, it's just where all your cells get agitated because they're all like infected and stuff, and then they're fighting it, and then they get all inflamed and stuff, and then they touch on each other, and then somehow there's nerve endings in there. They get all bothered.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. Bodies are crazy.
But yeah, at least we didn't have any cellulitis.
No.
This time. And
yeah.
We had a great beach time, both of us separately.
Everybody had a great time separately. Yeah. We're just working on building families in different corners, and then we'll bring them together
we'll get married.
Oh,
we'll all have a mass
Everyone will
wedding.
Get married.
But a good cult.
To each other and to no one, and you can be free, you're wonderful people. Oh, can I do a rest in power?
Yeah.
Rest in power, Willem Vance Bronson.
Oh, man, I was just reading about that.
Yeah, dude. This has been... So, I'm a manifesto freak.
Yeah.
And noting the differences, Willem Vance Bronson was beautiful. He's, like, quoting Emma Goldman.
Yes.
And he's just like, hey, you know what? Watch out for centrists, because they're just going to tell you, like... You know, that there are camps and we just need to clean them up a little bit or, like, take care of them slowly or...
More women guards.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, so he's like, watch out for centrists. Also, we should really just fucking end this shit right now. We just got to get rid of it right now.
Yes.
Hello, here's my manifesto. And the whole thing, he was like, you know what? I'm not going to live very long. I want to do something meaningful. So I'm going to go and try to take down the buses that are being used to deport people. And I just...
Did you listen to the music too?
Oh,
absolutely,
yeah.
Gorgeous. Like, I was so moved just listening to the tracks, like the one for his son and like...
Yeah, this person cared so deeply about humanity and was gunned down in the struggle.
Yeah, and I do think that they're beyond gender. Like, everyone was debating their gender. I feel like they were like hitting on a type of like, you know, oneness. Like they were in touch with like I don't think they were like joking when they were doing stuff under women's names and stuff. I think they were
sincerely tapping into something. Yeah, the manifesto too was the most earnest, like painfully sincere, emotional outpouring.
It was beautiful.
I highly suggest looking it up and reading it and having a good feeling that there are people that are trying to. I don't know. I was like, oh, this is a performance for sure.
And they didn't hurt anybody. Like, they were going after the fans.
Yeah. And that's such a leftist technique in, you see that in different, like, I don't know, like Weather Underground or whatever, or like, you know, there's scary things that happen where people do target infrastructure that ends up hobbling the state. And that's a leftist technique, but it pales in comparison to the way that these alt-right lone wolf actors are out lives wholesale.
Every week, like all the time.
Yeah, just constantly, every day, to the point where it's not even news.
Yeah.
And this person is like, no, I don't want the vehicles to be used to kill people anymore. Like,
It was a beautiful act of love. It was fucking property, and people need to stop conflating property damaged with violence, because it's not.
Yeah, the buses are not alive. So, yeah, and that's such a thing that the media will do.
Oh, boy, good segue.
the media will use this language to say, like, the buses were stricken or engulfed in flames. And you just have to, like, get this automatic emotional response attached to it as if it's like your loved one.
No, it's a fucking car.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Seriously. Like, and if the car or the bus is a human and it's doing its job taking other humans to concentration camps, then you know what? Like, fuck that. Fuck that person.
Yeah, you know, maybe if somebody has signed up to shoot poor people for a living, maybe they deserve a little infliction. I'm talking about the cops who got water thrown at them and then everybody was crying assault.
Oh no.
Like,
oh,
including de Blasio. Ugh. Was like, this is unacceptable. Like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Fuck off, fuck off, fuck off.
Also, where was de Blasio when all of the power was going out? Because it got so hot in the city that there were power outages everywhere.
All I've been doing on Twitter for the past like couple days is just yelling about de Blasio. So people who follow me there, sorry, I'm going to rehash some of this
shit.
But
I don't even go on Twitter anymore. I'm just in the world, and the news still finds me there.
I will say you should participate in our Discord, because we were talking about Vince Brawson and all this stuff. Like, and I think it's a nice little refuge community in between.
That's cute.
What's the big bad internet. But yeah, de Blasio today came out in favor of making Con Ed a public utility, which is great. Drop your fucking presidential run and get back to New York City and spend your time actually enacting this shit and not just like saying it for fluff points.
Right.
Because it's like, what are you doing this vanity run for president?
Yeah.
Like, it's such a fucking waste.
You're not going to win. You're not going to win.
It's no world. There's no reality. You're unpopular here. Like, I mean, you're like popular enough to get reelected probably, but like people are super disappointed in. Like,
yeah, no, the power is going out everywhere. And then did you see that post on Subway Creatures?
I don't know. Subway Creatures. Is that an Instagram?
Oh, yeah. Oh, what?
I think I've seen it, but I'm not really an Instagram person.
OK, so, oh, yeah, I do the Instagrams, but
we're like opposite internet.
Hey, we cover all our bases.
Yeah.
Okay, so on Subway Creatures, there was a video of this construction wall in a subway giving out with flood water.
And
then this dude
was
getting like swept into the tracks.
That was terrifying.
It's horrible. Yeah, the city is literally falling apart.
It's
and like
terrifying.
All in Midtown Manhattan, like the part where the rich people live. All of the power was out. Total blackout.
You were in Manhattan. I was in like full like, if you need a place to go,
I know,
like
you were
I'm serious. Like everything's gonna fall apart.
Yeah.
It's gonna happen like that, you guys.
It's happening though,
because it's happening now. And like, ooh boy,
it's fine. Listen,
I'm a bit
like,
freaked about it. So.
I'm freaked about it, but I'm also so freaked by everything. Like the combination of my personal life being uncertain, the city infrastructure being uncertain, the classification of leftists as leftists as domestic terrorists was a thing that happened.
Yeah,
this
they're trying
week
to.
Too.
Ted Cruz came out as
Cruz. Yeah. Hey guys, what if we make some legislation that says that these people are all domestic terrorists because they fight Nazis? Hey, that's a cool policy, right?
Holy piece of shit.
Shit, dude. Yeah. And who was the shit heel who signed onto that too? Who was like, yeah, this'll be ours together. Let's walk hand in hand down the aisle, Ted.
I don't know. They're all shit heels. All the fucking Senate can be thrown in the trash, dude. As far as I'm concerned. I don't think there's a single salvageable senator.
AOC!
No, she's not a senator. She's
Congress. And I'm like, no, she can just do the Senate.
Sanders is a senator technically.
Oh yeah,
right now.
Senator Sanders.
But
and Senator Warren
maybe can stay, but that's it. I'm good with the rest of them going. I'm fine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but
I don't even know anyone.
Maybe the lady from Hawaii is cool, but I can't remember if she's
Tulsi Gabbard.
I can't remember. Can't remember if she's House or Senate.
I don't remember either.
I don't know.
Tulsi Gabbard's cool. She talks about Aloha.
Oh, yeah.
She's basically Marianne Williamson or whatever, but with a different suit.
But grew up in a cult and had to unlearn a bunch of weird shit.
And is troops.
Yeah, and is troops, and that's no good. Yeah.
Yeah. But what's worse, being troops or being a spiritual guide to Oprah?
I don't know, honestly.
Yeah, right? Everything is real bad, folks. Just saying. How are we going to split hairs? Everything's so
bad. We don't have to because Bernie's in the race. That's the thing. We can just point people. Just fucking vote for Bernie. Come on. Just,
I don't concentrate on anything else except for that. I'm just like, no, this has got to work. This is going to...
I mean,
so you guys know, right?
But then the thing is, it's like people are bringing up that like the vote about the debt ceiling always cripples whatever. So that's a bad word. But like, you know, it really fucks up when the Democrats go into power because like the deadline for it is they keep switching it for when the Democrats are in power and then like nobody can do anything. And it's just like there's all these mechanisms in place for things to not be reformed.
Yeah, so, there's going to be like another government shutdown.
But, you know, then, like I've said, the reason I like Bernie is because he talks in terms of mass movement building. And so if we're not like putting all of our heroic hopes into one person, we're building a movement here that will last beyond Bernie Sanders.
Well, he also has an incredibly comprehensive platform that just says, OK, well, what's the breakdown of our issues? Like, compared to, it's a real fun game if you look at Bernie Sanders' campaign promises and then, like, Pete Buttigieg's campaign promises. Like Bernie has three columns of very distinct points that he would work on. And they include, like, support to Puerto Rico. You know, like, it's like, no, we're going to do this. Like, water to Flint, Michigan. Like, just... Yeah. Direct, clear, like, we're going to bring this to there.
Yeah.
And then you look at Mayor Pete's three lines.
Access to.
Three lines. It's like, people should be afforded the freedom from and the freedom to. That's one of the points.
Great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
To access healthcare or something.
No, not even. Not even. Oh, my God. Nothing. The vaguest puffery just... The freedom from and the freedom to. Hey, I also read Isaiah Berlin in school.
I was raised in a pod to become president one day.
Basically.
I set out my whole life path. God, fuck this.
Yeah. So the media has been twisting us in all sorts of ways, trying to tell us that the people who run our city could be the people who run our country, and the people who run our country are actually doing their job, and in our industry they've been doing some fun things too.
our industry is wild. I mean when we started this podcast over a year ago, I didn't anticipate these issues like being on the front page of the New York Times.
No, it's pretty dope.
Like, that's pretty dope. You know, when I was pushed out of Art Forum for, you know, being vocally against the, like, inherently, like, exploitative structure of it, I did not, like, expect them to do a big, you know, progressive rebrand to try to pave over that, that they're still trying to pave over to this day. And I also didn't expect not just, you know, one major union win in regards to art and cultural museums, but like eight more.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Like this time last year. Yeah. The things that have developed, I couldn't have guessed that what we were doing was going to take on so much more of a... There's a significance. Like, I don't know, the Varick Street thing was a real shock on one end. It was like, oh, okay, well, we're protesting here and there's all of these really sweet people who are like, hey, we don't want this to happen. And now that immigration situation has just turned full on fascist and turned into like a total complete hellscape that is like hard to grasp. And then on the other hand is like this really beautiful win where we were like, oh, what if we try to like have discussions about what art workers are and like how they could get together? And now it's like every museum in the city is talking about unionizing or has unionized.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's cool to know that like other people were there and thinking about this and dedicated to it and like wanting to do it, because like for years, you know, me and Lucia, when we first started the podcast, talked about like trying to talk about this with people and just getting shut down all the time. Like and then finding each other was great, because it's like, oh yeah, you've been in this sector, I've been in this sector, and we're frustrated about like the same stuff.
Also having the ability to refine the kind of demands on the market, or you know, the sort of like the issues with the way that we are not taken care of as human beings, and the way that that's like filtered through our industry is really particular. But it's so complex because we work mainly in a communications industry. If anything, like making art and making culture and making all of these things is it's just like means that a lot of the people that you're that are hiring you are also excellent at making narratives and seeing the way that museums are also trying to like fight back against unions and like all of these different aspects of how the forces are coming at each other. And like, I don't know, it's all coming out in the New York Times, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, let's just get into it, because like there's a lot, you know, for one thing, like it's great that this article is in the New York Times and interviews a lot of really awesome art workers who we've also interviewed. And like always have great things to say, but then it has a couple of like really important fucked up framing issues that we need to that it's important that we highlight, because and others already are doing it on Twitter, like AM Transparency, which is the group that not only has the museum salary share spreadsheet, but now they have an unpaid internship survey and spreadsheet. That I encourage everybody to fill out your experiences as an unpaid internship, even if it was in the past. It's a really great project that they're doing, and a lot of like the snowballing effect is because of those spreadsheets. You know?
I just found the quote. Okay, so there is a New York Times piece that came out, and it talks a lot about the different organizing efforts in the institutions, like the MoMA, Guggenheim, the New Museum, and they have a mention about the spreadsheets that says the staff salaries on the spreadsheet are self-reported, making it difficult to draw conclusions about particular jobs or institutions. The Philadelphia Museum said it, quote unquote, works very hard to ensure that wages and the overall compensation package are competitive. The Whitney disputed the entry for its curatorial assistance. Wow. Okay. The Whitney, like, saying the job pays $50,000 to $55,000. Plus overtime.
Yeah, but is that your curatorial assistance on the books, or is that the ones you keep on illegal 1099s? Like, you know, what's their distinction here? Like, there's no reporting happening here. They're just, like, printing parts of press releases and PR from, like, higher-ups. Like, they're doing, like, a both sides. They're interviewing some workers and they're interviewing management. And then in the case of the Fry Museum in Seattle, they didn't interview any of the workers there. They just interviewed the fucking CEO.
Yeah, it's just wild. Like, it's very strange when you see these narratives develop around the efforts of workers to make a more supportive environment for their survival and for their like flourishing and for them to feel like they can, you know, afford the cost of living very basic things that people are asking for to be able to, like, stay rooted in their communities. And then you see people who are not in any respect attached to this struggle in the kind of, like, well, hey, you know, I'm here and I run a lot of these... I've got a lot of businesses and I'm trying to be as vague as possible, but here I am and I'm a very rich white man and I want to tell you all something that I've noticed.
You might not know what it's like to run a museum.
Yeah. Well, you might not know this, everyone out there in the New York Times readership, but I'm Mr. Moneybags, and I'm here to tell you that all of the artist estates that I pull
He's back, guys.
The artist estates that I manage and that I accrue wealth from have nothing to do with this.
Mr. Moneybags, I worked for the museum for 15 years, and I just lost my home, and I had to get a new apartment, and because of, you know, rising rent costs, I'm paying double what I was paying a decade ago, and now I can't afford to keep working here.
Well, you see, I took a bunch of oil, and I turned it into art, and then I sold it, and I have something to say about what I noticed. So please, refer back to the New York Times, because I can see that you're struggling.
Oh, Mr. Moneybags, I have a couple of Picassos in a duty-free port, and maybe we can do a little bit of trading in exchange for some of my wink-wink merchandise on my wink-wink island temple.
Well, absolutely. I love ripe, fresh, young merchandise. And you know what else I love? The workers' struggle.
Oh my God! I want to read the part of the article where the New York Times is like, expansions are sexy and workers are not sexy.
Oh my God! Yes,
I fucking hate the New York Times. Here. You guys,
I don't know where it is. But
I'll
please.
Find it. I'm paywalled on my phone because
we're looking at the news too much and we're not paying for it, and it's really unacceptable to be such a plebe who wants to also be informed. So yeah, honestly, I don't even look. I don't look because I'm that good.
This is the most infuriating part to me. Union drives sometimes coincide with building expansions when vast sums of money are collected for ambitious new wings designed by celebrity architects, like the New Museum's current $89 million project by Rem Koolhaas's firm OMA, same firm that was doing the Saudi Arabian thing.
Yeah,
that Hito wrote the article about. Which we have not done that episode. Sorry. We'll get to it. We went to the show at Park Avenue Armory.
Oh yeah,
but we haven't done the episode yet. Sorry.
Oh, did we release a snackcast on that?
It's on our paywall if people want to give us $5.
Yeah, there you go. You know? Also, I get flustered at a tea house. You were very level and you were excited about something we're going to talk more about.
Yeah.
This episode.
I love debates. I mean, or like, I think it's good to have a you know, emotional conversation.
A dialectic.
I love it. Legit. But that wasn't actually the part that I was thinking of. But it's related.
No, there was. It's like, oh, labor issues are hard to make sexy, which is, you know, it's something that I think we're all concerned about.
If it's sexy or not.
Yeah, totally. Oh. No, it's, you know, you can't make it in this world if you're not sexy, folks.
And oh my God. Yeah, they interviewed Michelle, who we had on, Michelle's great.
Yeah.
And they interviewed Dana, who's amazing. They talk about
the
Kimberly
too.
Drew, which is a good part. But yeah, they're doing a both sides thing, and it's very, very fucking annoying.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's fair.
Okay, I found it.
Balanced.
In reality, while wealthy donors are generally happy to contribute to construction projects, often drawn by naming opportunities, they are far less excited about subsidizing unsexy operating expenses like salaries and benefits. People, aka the people who work at the museum and make it happen.
They're not as sexy as architecture. I'm sorry. Look. I don't know about you, but I'm post-human.
Do they really want to be put under a microscope, by the way? Like the Sacklers? Like,
oh, no. Gross.
Think about it.
Oh, okay. also all of these fights with the boards of these institutions are developing in tandem with the workers' movements, which is also, I think, exciting and
it's
awesome.
Exciting.
Yeah, totally, totally into the movement, but I'm very hesitant to sign on to a few moves that I think are actually detrimental to artists, which is something that was like very raw about at the on the last Snackcast. But yeah,
but like we said on that, and people should just give us money for it because we're not going to get into it all here, but like, you know, there are people on Nan Golden's level who should all be stepping up. I think, like, the people who are like already secure and wealthy.
Well, it's interesting, like, and so we're looking at the concept of an artist, and we think that the public acclaim is going to equate somehow to accruing capital, but you see especially with, second wave feminists or some, you know, women in general, actually, even more than across, like, racial lines, women are paid way less, if not they don't get any money except for if they have an institutional show.
Right, and that's the problem with media things too, is because media bolsters people's images and it makes it seem like, oh, they're fine, but maybe they're not fine.
Yeah.
Like
I would bring in, so like Maggie Nelson is an incredible chronicler of art in general, but she wrote this piece on Carolee Schneeman when she passed away. And, you know, I just love Maggie Nelson's writing, and like, major shout out. Everybody pick up The Art of Cruelty if you want to read a super good history of the way that violence in all of its forms enters into art and is processed through making. But she wrote this piece about Carolee Schneeman and just how she died with no money and lots of cancer. This is a person we're taught about in schools. Like, this is when you go to art school and it's like, okay, well, these are like the feminists
She spoke at my school and it was amazing.
She's an amazing, she was an amazing artist who suffered incredibly and was not compensated.
Yeah, and did she ever have access to insure? Like, did she ever have, was she ever insured? Like, do we know this?
She had some health care, and in the end, you know, it was just sort of like, oh, well, she's got a little house upstate and she's probably fine. But a lot of these artists will end up, They'll have their work with them in their house waiting for another institution to say, like, oh, you're important again. And then they get paid by the museum.
Right.
And then they have that show. It doesn't sell. It doesn't go into the collection a lot of times. It just goes back to their house or something.
You know,
and
it reminds me of, aging women actors.
Oh, totally.
Who are often, think of, old school Hollywood glamour people who similar tragic ends, because it's just like they're just discarded when they're ugly.
You're ugly now. Nobody cares. It's just like, oh my God, because we're busy following the media narrative down some other rabbit hole, and we don't really, you know, and we want to say like that we're following some kind of a progressive trail, but really we're dropping bodies left and right when it's like a content creator.
This is the holistic approach to this stuff that I tried to pitch, full disclosure, everybody, I tried to pitch like a response to the art form piece that is like goes further and is more like a holistic.
After I got all pissed off at the tea house, I'll write an article, I promise.
I want to talk about this more. But I still want to write it for our paywall, because it's,
Well, anyway,
it pays better than these media companies. Even though the
pays on time,
even though the freelance isn't free act, you're supposed to get paid within 30 days. It doesn't actually happen, even in these progressive art magazines.
It's
putting
ridiculous.
That out there.
It's just kind of like, you know, I get, okay, so the weird thing that's happening right now in the art world that is really worth taking a moment and looking at is that the artists that are being addressed in the call to action to become the front for these protest movements are not in the same sort of like financial category as each other and as like whatever concept of artist the people who are making this media is like creating. So, you know, instead of taking the time to go, who are we really addressing? It's just sort of like, oh, well, you're all some kind of like a public front. And these artists, you know, they should be like using all of their clout and all of their attention grabbing ways to make a real statement, to get at the heart of the issue, because the money that is funding their existence is bad. And it's like, homie, all the money everywhere is bad. The money that's funding Art Forum is bad. And you're writing for them and they're paying you. And you're using that platform to talk about how other people should not be getting paid. And it's just like, where do we draw the line and where do we build solidarity?
Right. I mean, without having a, like, you know, I think what's great about all of these art workers unionizing is that we could build a structure outside of the funders of these museums to take care of each other for when we want to have a moment of like we're all stepping out or whatever. There's no structure to make sure everybody is taken care of, and everybody deserves to be taken care of, period.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what side of the aisle they're on or whatever the fuck. It's like we're not just like discarding people based on like whatever shit worldview capitalism has shaped in their brains. They all deserve to be taken care of. So like, if that isn't, like, considered holistically, I think the actions will not be enough anyway. Like, the moments that we're trying to craft or whatever and will like, not be enough anyway.
And just to be clear for everybody who maybe is busy with their own struggles and their own work and lives and the things that they're focusing on, there's a piece in Art Forum that's the Whitney Tear Gas Biennial. And in this piece, there is a call to action for artists to remove themselves from this show. And while it does have a somewhat of an impactful message to remove yourself, it also has a lot of like concrete issues that don't get the airtime they deserve. And it's like, I don't know. I think it's worth breaking down, because basically if you were an artist, say like, you know, whatever, you're maybe you're scrapping a little bit, you know, maybe you're putting a lot of effort into your craft because you believe in the narrative that you're trying to discuss, and you're trying to actually deal with a cultural issue already. Like, you're already processing something, ideally. I mean, you know, a lot of people are also total fuckboys who aren't really processing anything, and they're already rich, and they suck, and screw
and
them.
And they could definitely serve to be doing, like, they can do more.
They could, Those and folks, they could also just, like, drop out and become a finance bro.
They could,
like,
easily.
Honestly, and a lot of them do. A lot of them do.
Yeah, they do. A lot of art bros become finance bros. That's so true.
A lot of them do. They don't know what they want young in life, and then they think they can make a painting, and then they realize that it's extremely lonely and difficult to actually continue on making a product for your whole life.
For decades.
Yeah, forever. Like, for like,
this isn't like a young person's game, as much as like the way these things are structured makes it seem. Like, all of these conversations are always like predicated on like biennials and these shit things that are like just to showcase new and fresh blood every time.
But the thing about these events and the way that they hold space is like, okay, so you're an artist and, you know, maybe you came from Puerto Rico and maybe you did make it into a system and maybe you did go to Skowhegan and maybe every single step you took was actually difficult because you didn't come from some means. And then maybe your art isn't selling because it's conceptual. And maybe, like, you made an assemblage and then you entered it into the institutional space because you want to have a conversation with the public about the issues that are going on in the place where you come from.
And that's I'll post this other piece too, the Art News piece where the artists who didn't pull out responded.
Yeah.
Because that's where a lot of them are coming from. And folks can read it. I'll put it in the show notes.
And so, like, you get to the point where you have this public conversation and you're able to bring some awareness to a very specific issue that you wish that people would think about in a metropolitan area. You know, like, you bring an issue to Rome, basically, in the hopes that it will reach someone. And asking that person to then change what their message is about and say, like, well, now it's about this local issue. Now you have to be talking about this guy that we're trying to get out of the museum board. It's like, well, you know what? Relax, okay? Because the issues have equivalent weight. The issues being dealt with have some weight. Like, if people are dealing with being, having Puerto Rico be destroyed and then having an artist come and be like, yeah, you know, like, this is what is coming from the place that I am from, and this is what is happening here, and we're trying to talk about that, then it's like, it has equal weight to people who are being, like, harmed with tear gas.
And to their credit, they are trying to tie it to a global movement. They are trying to tie removing Candace from the board to Palestine, to Puerto Rico.
I know, they're trying to tie it all together, but they're also overstepping the authorship of people who are trying to have their own conversations. And it's like, so, okay, so these people who wrote an article who do not participate in the same way, who are not practitioners of art in the same way, they're just not. And it's fine, they're not. But they think that they're allowed to say, like, come on, rally around me, like, because I wrote a thing and I think I'm right. And it's like, okay, well, you know what? You have a good point.
That's the problem, is it's too individualized. And that's the critique. And that's, like, the critique that they dismiss in the piece about wage and decolonize. Those are also too individualized. That's what I honestly think it needs to be a decentralized collective moment, like the spreadsheets.
Yeah, totally.
And like the art workers' inquiry. And like,
and if we let, so if we, so yeah, definitely. We need collective movements and we need to work together and we need to build solidarity. But the thing that these articles are doing is splitting our artist population. And then when you have a rift like that and you have something that is so, like, polarizing, then it's not working. This isn't working. If you have two very clear sides from a call to action and you have just, like, a total black and white situation, you just split a community and you made it really tense in the community too. And that's not a good act of solidarity. Like, the feeling is there and everybody wants to work together, but honestly, like,
and everyone did sign the letter, right? Everyone.
Yeah, people are like, people don't want more. You can't give people this ultimatum where it's like, well, if you stay here and you try to have a conversation about where you're from and you try to make art about where what your line of inquiry is and maybe has been for decades, well, then, like, you're actually against us. It's like, no, working on something at the same time.
Yeah.
And all of these voices are a collective endeavor.
It's also individualizing the problem, I think, a little too much. Like I said, they are trying to tie it to, like, all these global things, but, like, what is the contingency plan for when Candace is removed?
Exactly.
It will happen. Like, it's kind of a matter of when. And then, like, well, if we really believe that socialism will win, then it will happen.
Yeah.
So,
well,
if we
also
can operate,
there's precedent. Like, the Sackler name has been removed from many institutions, and it was a focal point that has been, like, lasered upon until the names just are scratched out of the walls. So we are seeing traction.
Yeah, and there's the other example they bring up in the article, a British museum or something.
Where, yeah, the BP, yeah, yeah, BP the or BP, not to BP, yeah, and yeah, like all of the British portrait gallery is trying to get the oil money out of their institutions, and that's working as well. And so there is a lot of pressure. But the thing about Warren Kanders and the thing about a lot of the other people on the board of all of these institutions is that, like, the
Especially
issue doesn't
the ones in New York near the finance capital.
The issue doesn't stop with the one bad man.
Yeah.
And also he has been tried for international war crimes and has just like slipped through a lot of cracks. And he is one of the people who benefits from a legal system that needs reform. And if we are going to take care of actually holding these people accountable, like, we're going to have to reform our legal system. We have to actually have, like...
Right. So instead of operating on the premise of we're in this moment and we all need to do this together right now, we need to be operating on socialism is going to win.
Yeah.
And how do we want this whole thing restructured? Mm-hmm. And, like, we need to be demanding that from the start.
Yeah. Like, if there was a protest, okay, here's the protest that I would go to. We're going to go... we can still do it at the Whitney if you guys want to do it at the Whitney. I don't know. I would say let's go to Warren Kanders' house. Let's protest outside of it.
Which they have done. And that's really dope.
Marching from the Whitney to his place. Super dope. Love that. Super into it. But let's say, like, you know, hey, we want this person to stop operating completely. Like, we want, we want justice.
Yeah, do we want him shuffled to another nonprofit?
No.
Like, what's going to happen here? What do we actually want?
Yeah, I don't want him to just sell his company again, because he sold Safariland before when he was up against, you know, the courts.
Right, he just
bought it back. And it's like, okay, no, you can't just do that. There needs to be I hate prisons and stuff, but, like, these people should go...
Well, there needs to be a reckoning. There needs to be accountability. There needs to be actual, like, restructuring, not just reform, because the reforms will just get fucking paved over, like you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, so from the start, it needs to be, not contingent on these one things. It needs to be, like, this is what we want from museums. This is what... You know, this is how we think it should be structured. This is like,
yeah,
you
the
know.
Museum should not be beholden to the weird concessions they make for criminals. They should be a place for people to experience culture. And we've talked about that since some of the earliest episodes.
Oh, totally.
Like, what if they functioned like libraries? Like, what if they were part of...
Because other groups already did this. And that's another thing we harp on is, like, we're repeating 68, and it's like all making all the same mistakes, and like all the same individualized and atomized forces are doing the same exact fucking thing.
And it's exciting to see movement, but if we are able to take the traction that we've gained and point it towards actually restructuring the way that these operations are catering to the public.
Yeah.
It's like there shouldn't be any profit that is like lost to time and space and these weird black holes that are just individuals that decide they all need private jets and like rape castles on faraway islands. Like, it just doesn't make any sense that we can't.
It can't continue the way it is at all. Like, I think that some of these groups do have like other plans to continue beyond Warren Kanders, but right now it's become such a huge focal point that it's just going to dissipate like a fucking balloon.
Yeah, it's the same thing that was just going on last year with the MoMA protests and like the year before. It's like, oh, Trump advisors on the board. Hey, we hate this. Oh, get them out. Oh, whoops, they're all still there.
But then you get like that one of the fuckers in the New York Times being, I don't remember which one, being like, these are like liberal nonprofit progressive
at the Guggenheim
or whatever
guy.
Yeah,
he's like, Oh, you don't understand. Like, unions coming into museums, these are
third,
gross.
Like, and like, what are these like third party middlemen, like air conditioner repair people trying to tell us what to do?
And like, ruddy engineering issues.
Like, oh my God, fuck off.
Yeah, honestly, it's very clear in the language that people use that they're. Understanding of reality is not focused on the population that they're claiming to serve. And you can tell, and
it's just short-sighted.
There's denial around it, though, too. Like, we deny that there is a clear enemy, and then we get mad at each other for not, like, organizing the right way or something. And, you know, we are all, at the end of the day, trying to stay alive. And if you are doing something, I guess it's ridiculous. I guess it's totally silly to make culture, but at the end of the day, it's also not, because, you know, imagining a world where we let art become just like a bunch of people with picket signs inside and outside every institution. And like, it's just, it's too much. Like, we have to be able to have two thoughts at the same time.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we have to be able to have two thoughts at the same time. That's like, exactly it.
This is a beautiful art experience where I'm opening myself up to different concepts for a moment. And like, that's what I'm paying for when I get a ticket to go to a museum. It's like, oh, here's the way that things have developed, and I get to think about it because it's all in these rooms, and, you know, the stories are screwed up.
And it's like, do we really want to get into, like, a scarcity efficiency mindset? Like, there's too many artists, and there's too many this. It's like, you've brought this up on the podcast before. It's like other jobs do not get talked about in this way.
Nobody is like, oh, there's too many doctors, there's too many accountants, there's too many bus drivers.
And it's like, maybe there's a shortage of these jobs, but it's like, it's, you're not going to like funnel people who are like, have already invested all of like decades of their lives, like doing this type of work, and suddenly switch them into this other highly specialized type of work. Yeah. Like, it's going to be a process.
I mean, unless you just make them all do agricultural work.
Well, I wouldn't, you know, mind, you know, what is it? Fishing in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Tilling the fields in the evening and doing art at night.
Yeah.
I don't know. If it was like 2 hours of the work and then like 6 hours of the free time, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, we honestly do. We do have also, dude, work is just so screwed up in this country. Yeah, like, yeah. The Protestant work ethic thing, that's just a weird holdover, is a tide that is just smashing up against the bluff of automation. And we're just reaching this point where, like, the self-hatred of the human race is the foam off of the wave's crest. And we're just like, you know what, man? Oh, my God. The robot is going to make the painting for us, but we have too many paintings.
Oh, my God, wait. That gets me to fucking Lion King.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Let's bash Segway. Disney.
Because the new Lion King is just a photorealistic lions. They're just lions.
They're just lions,
like a nature documentary.
Yeah.
And you look at the side-by-sides of, like, you know, Hakuna Matata or whatever, and they're all, like, cool, emotive, jumping around, having fun, and then, like, just, like, nature documentary, walking.
What if the lions were just, like, real? But we have a document of them before they vanished from the planet forever because we made so many movies that we killed them all.
But we have computer ones that basically look the same. And when we're in VR, when the world is collapsed post-climate change, we'll have this moment.
Oh, snaps, it's like that story, The Veldt.
It's The Veldt! It's The Veldt! It's 100% The Veldt because The Veldt literally has a safari.
Yeah.
Like, and has,
the
like,
kids
a,
get a bunch of lions.
Oh, my
God. Become real again. It's like after there's no lions, and then they make lions in their mind, and then they become real and kill their parents. Boom. Yeah. Full on communism after that. And then the robot maids are just like, would you like another ice cream?
the belt.
Yeah.
The Lion King is the belt. That's so true. And then on top of that, the original Lion King that from the 90s, like, stole wholesale from Osamu Tezuka, who is the godfather of manga, who did Kimba.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, this is...
Oh, yeah. You can see the side-by-side shots of Kimba and the Lion King.
I mean,
and
people
it's just,
know
like,
this.
Such a ripoff.
Like, people know this, but it's, like...
Yeah, if you're, like, a real Tumblr head, you
but,
know?
Yeah, yeah. Well... I mean, even The Simpsons did a joke about it.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and they do, like, Kimba, I mean Simba. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's so, like, it's just so clear, like, that Disney's just this, like, totally bankrupt company. But it's, like, it's one thing to have, like, influences or whatever, but you have, like, there's all these clips of, like, Disney CEO guy being, like, unlike our other properties, Lion King is a totally original, like, not based on a pre-existing work. Like, he, like, literally says all that.
Guy.
Like, it's just like, all right. Like, and then this is the company that just bought Fox and is going to, like,
yeah,
and Marvel. And, like,
everything.
It's, like, the biggest company in the world now.
They bought
media-wise.
The Alien franchise, which I was like, you can't. Why would you go that far?
You can't do this.
You can't do this to me.
You can't do this. No, it's really bad. It's conglomeratization
bad.
Of, like, film and stuff is terrifying. It's, like, really bad. It's because, you know, if you look, it's, like, exponentially, like, there used to be many, many studios, and now there's, you know, we get down to, like, 8, and now we're down to, like, 3.
Hey, there used to be silent pictures, and then those talkies came along and ruined everything.
But it's, like, there's not even any, like, true independent features being made anymore, because they all have subsidiaries that do independent.
Yeah.
They're all, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's, well, I guess the way that media functions, or the way that mass culture is accustomed to operating is, like, it's like a constant boom and bust, or like it sort of like all becomes a monoculture again eventually, and then like you know we complain about not having a monoculture, but we do, and it's Disney and it's Marvel, and like you can ask anybody if they know what these things are, and of course you can have a conversation about it.
And you look at the popularity of something like Stranger Things, and Stranger Things is an algorithm show. It is absolutely a show made by an algorithm. It's like it's just nostalgia bait, and then you watch the nostalgia grow up and start to affect you personally more and more. And then also it's a big ad, like it has all these native advertisements in it for one thing. It's just like Netflix was supposed to be this like, oh, we don't have commercials thing. But then now they've built the commercials into it.
Well, it's kind of different though, the way that, okay, so.
But all I mean is that it's an advertisement for the rest of the Netflix library. Because
no, totally.
It's just all these references to all these other things.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, there's a format now of like the postmodern experience of the like viewing kind of serially that it's okay. So I'm thinking about it in relationship to the way the Stranger Things creators went and had an interview on the Dan Harmontown podcast, which I know.
Yeah, I know.
I know. I went
laughing.
There so you don't have to. And when they had this interview, and it, you know, it was very banal. It was sort of like, hey, yo, we're brand new, we're Stranger Things, and you know, it's gonna be this and that. And if you all like D&D on this show, like we play it in the TV and it's real cool. The kids are like into it, and there's a Demogorgon and stuff. We hope you guys like the monsters.
It starts out cool, totally.
Yeah, it's totally awesome. Like and that's the thing. It's like they are individuals who create this the sort of like framework for experiencing the rhizomatic nature of the cultural sphere. So, like, I appreciate what they're trying to do, especially in relationship to the Rick and Morty sphere, which is also, like...
It's similar, yeah.
Yeah, like, the way that we're experiencing hit TV now is that it's, like, an agglomeration of all of these notes that you can play where you make one reference.
Yeah,
signifier, and you layer them, and then people have this, like... the recognition that produces the pleasure. And it's not necessarily a nostalgia as much as now we're like cataloging our experiences and sharing each one as like
there's
a
something
trading
real
card
there.
Or something.
There is something real there. I get what you're saying. Yeah. There's something real to be like, ah, oh, you remember this too. I'm finding like warmth and friendship.
Yeah.
Like,
and we're connecting and we're also understanding the way that there's similarities between each of these, like each of them has like a tenor, and we're realizing that they can like be played symphonically, where you have a moment where it's like, remember this, remember this, remember this, remember this. And you do that with somebody, and then you reach a crescendo of like, yes, I think we've caught them all. And then you get like the experience of having a full Pokemon set. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I think this is actually new. We realize there's like a branch of culture that we built together and
but
understood.
Then cut to there's 1,500 Pokemon. There's too much to fit into the games anymore. So now there's like a big debate about having the national deck or the international deck.
Yeah.
And they can't like, they literally can't fit them all on the cartridge. But it's like, is that the program? Like, everyone's mad.
Right.
Like what?
Yeah.
It just goes too far.
It spins out. Yeah. And then we have to figure out what to do with that experience. But right now we're also experiencing like that level of life where more of our kind of interactions have to do with these removed experiences than they do with like anything direct, because we're so plugged into work, and then we just have this like
it sucks because like we're all at home watching it on television instead of talking about it like we are right now.
Yeah.
Like being like, do you remember that? Yeah. Oh man, that like that real interaction is so great. That's why I love conventions. Like I love like cons. Like I grew up going to anime conventions.
Hell
and
yeah.
Like those are like lasting things that mean a lot to me. And then like I conflate that sometimes with like fandom, but like fandom can be like so toxic because it's like people who are just like very lonely and have no support. So they just like have this show supporting them or whatever, which is like bad.
So the way that people build these identities, and think it's been pretty well documented at this point, but at the same time, identifying their kind of, I don't know, psychological construct doesn't change the way that they're operating, you know, like, so there are still all of these people who are like, yeah, I need to follow a pack of actors that walk through the world and collect things and like, and that's me and I'm a part of them and I'm like vicariously experiencing relief through the fantasy of being young, riding a bike, having a first kiss, playing Atari, listening
to
rock.
I wonder if, you know, there's something to like, you know, the rise of like Twitch streamers and like, you know, parasocial thing, like media, like that are like simulating a group of friends hanging out because maybe the generation under us isn't experiencing that as much as we got to or something.
I think that we're in a weird middle ground as like we just kind of got lost somewhere as the last generation to experience a life before the internet.
Yeah.
And now that we're the colonizers of this place, and we've decidedly turned ourselves into products that populate the sphere, and other generations have a more kind of like flip attitude about being born with a phone in their hand. They're
right.
Like, haha, yeah, whatever, Snapchat, boom, it's gone.
Whatever.
Who cares? Woo,
yeah.
There's my dick. I don't care. Ha.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, everything is just flowing past. There's all this information you can pick and choose or not. Who cares? And they're dealing with things in such a different way. I feel like so old. Those kids that have happened before us or after us. I mean,
I'm friends with some folks who are like 8 years younger than me, and like, yeah, they just seem like they haven't gotten to fuck up as much or something. They haven't gone to the punk show when they're 15 and get into a bunch of fucked up bullshit and
I mean also
die or whatever.
We just like don't hang out with those kids.
Those kids exist still for sure.
Yeah, those kids exist and they're like, ew, old people.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, where's all the punks at?
I don't know. Maybe I've run into kids who are like a little more like nervous and sheltered.
Yeah. Like, but I think there's also, there's definitely like some kind of a trend going on where the subsequent generations are experiencing the crushing weight of how screwed up everything is and how they're promised absolutely nothing.
Oh my God, totally. And there's like, a psychic terror happening.
Yeah, there's a psychic terror happening. And they're like, oh, that's all right. I'll just work all the time and try to be the best.
Yeah. And I wanted to recommend Gretchen Felkler Martin's work.
Oh, yeah.
Who we want to have on the show. We're in talks of having on the show at some point, but me and Lucia are really hard to schedule because our both of our schedules are completely all over the place.
We're just cobbling our lives together day by day. It changes
on a whim.
And it's not always our whims. It's like we're subject to other people.
Yes, we are.
Not just our audience. You're our favorite people to be subject to.
Yeah, I love you. Yeah. Love your $5.
Okay. Please subscribe.
But yeah,
please subscribe.
I'm gonna link Gretchen's piece about fandom that I love and I think I sent to you.
Yeah.
And I think is relevant to what we're talking about at the end here.
Into it.
And that's probably a good place for us to wrap up. I think we hit all of our points, don't you? Solidarity to Puerto Rico.
Solidarity to Puerto Rico.
Solidarity to Hawaii.
Solidarity worldwide.
Everywhere.
Solidarity
forever.
To all of the workers of the world.
Workers of the world, unite.
Unite.
That means everybody, not just the New York ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Patreon. Should we do a spot?
I don't know. We said before, but yes, please support us on Patreon.
Please.
It really helps. If you're on Drip, please switch to Patreon because I'm not posting the bonus stuff on Drip anymore. I'm just going to post it on Patreon from now on.
Right.
And I'll do a little reminder post on Drip being like, it's on Patreon.
Drip is ending.
Yeah.
This
Who knows?
Will be in the show
We shouldn't
notes.
Be relying on any of this shit. And I do. There's some people I have in mind for an episode planned about crowdfunding.
Good buddy.
That's a whole other thing.
Cool.
But please support us. Thank you guys so much. And we're going to go out to a song that you chose.
I just have Agent Orange stuck in my head.
Yeah, you do.
So please enjoy.
Thanks, everyone. Have fun with it. Bye.
Lots of fun. They can't.